A listener production.
Hi, and welcome back to Broadsheet Around Town. I'm Publications Director Nick Connellan. Today's guest is only 29 years old, but he's achieved so, so much in his short time. He's performed in and on the Sydney Opera House, climbing to the very top of the iconic sales to film a rework of Paul Kelly and Kev Carmody's 1993 song, From Little Things, Big Things Grow. He's also about to release his third album, Human, which also coincides with his debut novel of the same name. Last year, he also starred in the Stan series Black Snow and wrote the score for it. And he's a new father. Welcome, Ziggy Rama.
Yeah, thank you. That was a mouthful. Good work.
You've earned it. I purposely haven't mentioned anything about your background, which is such a big part of your work and your storytelling. Tell me a little bit about your early life, where you were born and where you grew up and what your home life was like.
Yeah, so I was born in Bellingen on the mid-north coast of New South Wales. And then pretty much instantly we moved back up to northeast Arnhem Land in Gopuyak. Gopuyak was the first place my parents had a job after teachers' college. And when they went there, both of them were adopted into the community and in the Yolngu kinship. So me and my three siblings were born into the Yolngu kinship, which is a pretty massive opportunity because my great-grandmother was stolen generation from Wik, Arakoon country. So we didn't have connection to our ancestral country or language or kinship. So being adopted into the Yolngu kinship, even though it wasn't our ancestral country through lineage, gave us, I guess, an understanding and an experience of our connection paralleled, if I can say it that way. Mm. And so
of a similar but not identical culture.
Yeah, of course. You know, and we don't ever kind of claim to speak on behalf of Yolngu country or Yolngu people, but in the same token, that is our family and that is our home. And our mumu or grandmother, you know, she was such a big pillar in kind of shaping, I guess, place and position and worldview and understanding. So, yeah, did that for the first kind of 6 years of life and then primary school in Perth and then high school on the mid-north coast and then finished high school in Sydney and then went back up to northeast Arnhem Land, then back to Perth to study and then kind of started doing the music thing from 2016, 2017.
It's which like, Ziggy's magical tour of Australia.
I know. You know,
round and round doing laps.
Yeah, just around and around.
What kind of music did you listen to growing up?
It was really eclectic. I mean, like growing up in Gopuyak, so in an oral culture, the way that you preserve and share knowledge is language and furthermore song lines. So I think we had a real privilege on growing up with Bungul ceremony and kind of seeing that specific and intentional use of art. So that played such a big impact on me. And then my parents were just fans of music and we had a real range of like Bob Marley, Stevie Wonder, and then hip hop and really eclectic. I mean, my mum's family are kind of dairy farmers in Barrville, which is about 40 minutes from the home of Slim Dusty and Kempsey. And so there was country, there was hip hop, there was soul and kind of everything in between.
And so your mother's background was Scottish, is that right?
Yeah, so her heritage is Scottish ancestry. Her ancestors came out from the Great Southern Highlands. They were being pushed off their land by the King of England and then in an interesting twist came out to here and then inherited stolen land as well. So it was this real kind of break of kind of cognitive dissonance where they obviously understood what it was to be pushed from their land, but then couldn't quite connect the dots that they were then taking land. So that was always kind of a really interesting dot and connecting of dots in understanding the collective history of what the last 236 years has been.
Mm. So growing up in a musical family, when did you go, I want to give this a crack. I want to get involved with this myself.
Yeah, it was always in the ether, but from a conscious thought, probably didn't happen until about, I'd say 15. Like I'd always been transfixed on music and it held such a special place, but it didn't come to me in like a, you know, I wasn't really good at piano or guitar from like a young age. It was just, but I understood story. And then when I was 15 with my brother, my elder brother, Jesse, we kind of stumbled onto the fact that I could freestyle. So I just kind of had this switch that flicked in my brain and all of a sudden everything could just rhyme and make sense. And then from there, that was the real inciting incident, kind of getting bitten by the radioactive spider moment for me, where it was like, oh, I have all of this new way to express myself and move through the world. And then from that point in about 2010, it was, yeah, I knew from that moment that it would be all consuming and chasing a path and journey where I was able to try and play with words.
So then how did you start taking your first steps towards producing and recording? Because that's, you know, it's one thing to be a 15-year-old kid freestyling in your free time, but like then to actually get somewhere with it.
Yeah, it was just like stubbornness, honestly. Like it didn't really feel like a choice. It felt like that is what I was supposed to do. So it was just about problem solving. And so the first probably 4 or 5 years was just really hyper-focused on the craft and just writing way too many songs and not going to all my classes and just making heaps of music. And then just starting to, put that kind of 10,000 hours in from a craft standpoint. And then along the way, you know, just starting to kind of chip away at it. There was, I mean, you look back on it with hindsight and you can kind of trace, oh, A, B, C, D, E led me here. But in the time, it was really just
put my head down. Deliberate.
Yeah. I mean, it was deliberate in like I knew where the end point was and I still know where I'm kind of trying to get with my end point. But it was just a commitment to no matter what the steps in between would be, I would figure it out to kind of actualize being able to do this as a career.
So were you just working with a little home bedroom mic or something like
that?
Yeah,
I started, I think my first mic was like a Sennheiser MK4 and this little interface. And I was just recording myself on GarageBand just endlessly. And then one of my brother's friends, he was interested in music. So then we kind of started working together remotely and YouTube was happening at that time. So there was like instrumentals on YouTube and it was really just like just applying myself to figure out craft. And then really hilariously, actually at the time I'd kind of uploaded some stuff on Triple J Unearthed, but like I was too scared to tell anyone that I was doing it. So I didn't enter it in Unearthed High and like kind of under a pseudonym, I started getting played on rotation on Triple J, but no one knew I was this high school kid. And I didn't really like looking back on it now, understanding what I do of the industry, like there was a lot of missteps, but it was just in a path of also kind of figuring out who I was as an artist and a person as well.
Gotcha. There's a really great bit in one of your tracks, White Lies, where you say, I got bigger things to rap about than getting dollar signs. I got bigger things to rap about than my own centimeters. Do you think all original people's rappers should be kind of engaging in that sort of activism the way you do?
No, I don't think so. I think my work gets put into a category of politics or activism and in the same, like in that line, I've got bigger things to rap about than dollar signs. That is me telling you about my life. That's not me, like, it's not to say that I'm shying away from trying to make change for my community, but as an artist, I don't really view myself differently than any other artist in the sense that I think we all just make art about our life, you know? And I just make music about my lived experience or write books about my lived experience or act or score, whatever it is. It's just trying to share my understanding of my specific lived experience. The difficult thing, I think, is that being Black in this country is inherently politicized. So a message of me talking about my lived experience is very quickly kind of positioned as political or hitting an agenda here or there. And it's like, well, like, I'm sorry that my existence is
political.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And that, and so I guess in terms of to then say what other artists should or shouldn't be doing, I very much struggle with in the sense of like, you know, and also for myself as an artist, I would love to get to a place where I'm not making art just about trauma. But unfortunately, there's a lot of intergenerational trauma wrapped up in my experience, and I'm still kind of figuring out how to unpack that all.
Yeah. So if we were to phrase that more explicitly, it would be like, I've got more profound things to say than just like, hey, check out how much money I've got. And those profound things don't necessarily have to be about oppression or whatever. They could just be about any aspect of life.
Yeah. And I mean, to wrap it up, it's kind of, it's more like the urgency of like, when I'm sitting down thinking about writing, and in that song specifically, I don't want to rap about the money I'm trying to get right now. I'm trying to rap about like the systemic oppression that is killing my community and my family. And when I say like community and family, like I mean my literal family. Like it's not like an abstract thing of like my community. It's like my literal family feel the effects of this. And so when I'm creating art, that's the thing that's kind of pulling my attention.
Mm. So America, obviously being the cradle of hip hop and rap, and there's definitely been people who use their platform there for political or whatever reasons. But I think so much of the stuff coming out today is still, is about those kind of pretty superficial issues of like money and sex and clout. What do you make of that?
I think that is twofold in that the population is just so much bigger. So you're going to have a wider range of music that's being made. And I mean, I don't think that there isn't the songs that are about lived experience that might include oppression or this or that. I just think it's like what is then siphoned into the mainstream. And, and that's kind of done by gatekeepers of power who want to push a certain message. I don't think that the art isn't being made. I just think about what is being championed. And then furthermore, I think America and the messages in their hip hop are probably about maybe 30 years ahead of us in the fact like, so, you know, I have a song called April 25th, which obviously has stirred up a bit of controversy. There's a song that very much influenced that by N.W.A. And so that song by N.W.A. was received pretty similarly. But that was in
probably the late 90s.
Late 90s, right? So we're talking about that song in the 90s having that reaction and then me going on Q&A April 25th happening in 2020. So like we're talking 30 years removed from the country having to reckon with artists telling their lived experience. So now Dr. Dre, who was in NWA, is a billionaire. So it's like those people who kind of had the messages of their community, of their lived experience, and saying them in a very transparent and explicit way have been embedded in that storytelling for 30 years plus, where it's like, you know, the concepts that I'm maybe talking about in my art, in the way that I'm doing it, that's kind of, we're pioneering our story here in real time.
It's kind of a double-edged sword. On the one hand, I'm kind of disappointed that 30 years later, these things are still being received the same way. And it's like, God, Australia are really lagging that much. But it also suggests that we're on the precipice of something really exciting.
I think so. I mean, I think definitely. I mean, and then, I mean, furthermore, it's like, you know, we started this with the mention of like Uncle Kev Carmody and Paul Kelly. And it's like, well, you know, 30 years ago.
That was 93, right?
93.
So 31.
Do you know what I mean? So it's not that these stories weren't happening in this country or whatever. It's just that it's like, I mean, that song had the face of Paul Kelly and the reverence that he started to come with. But it's like now when those messages are coming with us and from us, obviously it's going to take a second for people to grapple with it, you know, because I mean the lack of teaching of the different perspectives of history has been like a very designed and well-executed plan from the beginning of colonization. You know, reserves and missionaries were established out of town because the preceding thought of original people were that we were a few steps behind human evolution and we were on the brink of extinction. So the preceding thought was that we would die out or with eugenics be absorbed into Australian culture through the White Australian policy, which ran until the 1970s. So 236 years, right, from Federation 1901. So average life expectancy of Australians are 83. So what's that? 8 times 4. So we're talking from you 3 generations back from Federation.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like, are like knocking on the door to the point of it's like we're talking about my great-grandmother in the stolen generation. We're talking about my father being born before 67, not counted in the census. So it's like we are, so it was, as you said, it's like this double-edged sword of like, yeah, we wish we were further, but then it's also like from my dad not being born as a citizen to, as you said, me being on top of the Sydney Opera House talking about the doctrine of discovery. Like, I think it's such a big thing of like, you always want to grapple and recognize where we've gotten, but also not allow that to make us content of, okay, well, we might as well stop.
So one thing that struck me about you, and this is the case with a lot of artists, right? Their onstage persona is very different to their in-person persona, but with you, that gap seems really large. You know, I've seen you sobbing and screaming on stage and these huge emotions, but in here, you're so relaxed and easygoing. What does it take for you to get on stage and unleash that? Is it something that's within you and you kind of save it up and explode it out, or?
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty conscious divide, I would say. Like, I think for who I am as a person, I'm pretty protective over in that I want my life and space to be protected and have it for me and my family. And not to say that like the art is a facade, but the art is a very specific part of who I am and what I'm exploring. The way that I kind of think about it and the way that I've spoken about it with my dad a lot is finding the songlines of displacement and dispossession. As we were talking about, we don't have access to our ancestral songlines. And dad always talks about dispossession and displacement as being a state rather than an identity. Mm. So, you know, we were dispossessed, but that is now identity. You know, our identity is a lineage of 50,000 plus years of knowledge, history, culture. And so even though there's a gap in that, it doesn't mean that inherently we don't have those practices embedded in the fabric of who we are. And so within my art, it's so much about trying to reclaim and rediscover those songlines of dispossession and displacement and exploring that identity. And so, I mean, as much as it takes a lot to get there and go there, there's something that is pretty magical for me in actualizing this invisible trauma into real pieces of art that exist outside of my body, because a lot of the time you can feel very crazy because you're growing up in it's like a horror movie where the main character is like, oh my God, there's like a virus and we're all going to die. And everyone's like, that's not a virus, chill out. And they feel like they're going crazy. It's like when you have this intergenerational trauma and you have understanding of all of our history and the vast majority of the people you're growing up, you know, the dominant culture of 97%, haven't been forced to reckon with it in the same way or with the same urgency as you have, you can start to kind of question your reality and you're up from down. So for me in art, getting to actualize it is both re-traumatizing and healing because it's kind of the closing of a loop.
Mm. So like cathartic in a way, yeah. But also you're opening up a fresh wound.
Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of emotions, I had some very confusing ones this week. I was checking out your new single, Bunamba, which means choice.
So Bunamba, change.
Bunamba, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
Change. And it's from the forthcoming album, Human. I got genuine spine chills watching that clip. Number one, because it's kind of this beautiful, uplifting song. It has a kind of sense of community and communalism to it. But then the other half of the spine chills was like this really awful, uncomfortable feeling because of this. It's this compilation of original people being brutalized as they're kind of peacefully protesting for their rights. So you said in a previous interview that you hope your work can be an antidote to apathy.
Mm.
Is that, would you consider that a home run that someone like me, a white Anglo-Australian, is feeling these sorts of very confused, strong emotions? Or is it you want it to go much further than that?
To an extent, I mean, I think I very much came into this feeling that kind of antidote to apathy. One thing that I have maybe become a little bit more attuned to is like the singular thing you can control is your own actions. And I can't control what people feel to my art. And I think it's probably pretty naive and narcissistic to think that you can in that you just don't have that level of control. And so I think I've tried to go a lot more inward in what is a home run and what is a success with the art. I think for me, especially with this project and this book and this new music, so much of it has been, it's trying to actually determine if it's a success before I ever share it. Have I genuinely expressed something that is true and authentic and then kind of come to peace with that? And I mean, not to diminish like your, I think it's letting it go, you know? So whatever you feel to it is a home run, like the fact that you engage with it, like, and whatever that, like I'm sure you have an understanding of this in the content game. It's like, we are in such an oversaturated, like overexposed time where there is just endless, you know, cause we live in a subscription model, right? And a subscription model champions content, not necessarily art. It doesn't really care if it's art. It cares if it's content, if it keeps people on a platform and keeps them subscribing monthly. It actually doesn't really champion the relationship between the audience and the artist. Mm. And so for me, with this next project and the book and the album, and there's the third component of each song and chapter has been distilled into a piece of visual art, exploring the themes in both of them. It's been about, I would say, trying to create experiences for people to engage with my art in the physical world. Because I think when we have those moments of connecting to art kind of through the removal of screens and stuff, we don't have to like account for the humanity in that exchange. And so the hope is by creating things in the physical world, like we're inviting, because I don't know about you, but I've felt more and more we are less creating spaces to disagree. And I think we learn by disagreeing. I think if you only are creating an environment with an echo chamber, then you're just reinforcing. And I think more and more we're getting further apart from each other, reinforcing what we already feel. And the hope is by trying to create spaces that allows lots of people to come into them, then we can kind of learn from each other versus turn our backs and keep walking.
Let's talk about that forthcoming book. So the album is Human? But it coincides with the debut book, which is Human? A lie that's been killing us since 1788. What is the central idea behind it?
It's that we're all human. Human really explores, I guess, my hopes and my understandings. And the real central theme is that if you come away with it being able to connect to my story, as a human, then it leaves us at a place of having to reevaluate the direction we're heading, because colonization in Western countries was built upon that some people are human and other people aren't. And those were the founding tenets in the doctrine of discovery, which grew into Terra Nullius. And ultimately, what it justified was the dehumanization of humans. So that led for occupancy and not ownership. And so in this continent, original people were given occupancy and not ownership. And so my feeling is that we are very much caught up in dealing with the symptoms of that dehumanization rather than focusing on the root. Because I don't think that the system we uphold, which is created, invented, and nurtured by people, I don't think it serves us, original or not. We live in kind of a barrel, a kind of crabs in a barrel thing where, you know, we're all pulling each other down, and with this kind of little glimmer of hope that if you push someone down, there's a little bit more for you up there, but not realizing that leaves you open to being pushed down yourself. And we kind of uphold a system that we oppress other people, not realizing that that leaves yourself open to be oppressed yourself. And so my kind of feeling is that, I mean, living in a time where sustainability is front of mind, global warming probably isn't going to care about gender, race, quality, class, sexuality.
Mother Nature doesn't discriminate.
No, not at all. And so my kind of feeling is like, until we kind of can reckon with our lack of collective humanity, we're going to be stuck carrying out the same cycles over and over.
So how did you find writing a book compared to writing lyrics? Did you find it much different in terms of the process?
To an extent, I've been really lucky, and I guess it's been quite intentional to work across a lot of mediums.
You dropped the visual art on me.
Yeah,
I didn't even know about that one.
What I've really started to understand is that I understand story. That's kind of my thing. And like this new album, I'm playing guitar and singing, which is not...
Like it's almost like a singer-songwriter.
Yeah,
acoustic.
Totally. Yeah. And I'm, you know, I'm not the best singer. I'm not the best guitar player, but like that was the best thing to fit the story. And similarly, the message I think really needed the nuance and space of a book. My debut album Black Thoughts is almost 7,000 words, which is dense for an album. It's very dense, but a manuscript, yeah, it's like 70,000 to 80,000 words. So when you then take that space and give each song a chapter where you can dedicate anywhere between 6,000 to 10,000 words to because I really started to understand that my music has a lot of assumed knowledge in it, because I'm obviously writing from a lived experience that 3.3% of people have here. And so there was a lot of space for
people. And that's if they grew up on country as well.
Totally.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. And that, because that's the whole thing is like within the 3.3%, a lot of the time we become homogenized as a collective when in reality there was 500 plus nations, 700 plus languages and dialects. And then we all are also individual and don't all necessarily sit by a fire and say, kumbaya, we agree on the exact thing. It's like as if all white people agree on all the same things, you know? And so, yeah, my kind of feeling with this project, also like I, outside of all of the overthinking and of constant fear of us burning and dying, I love video games. I don't know if you've ever played Zelda Breath of the Wild, but it's really epic. And I fall in love with art that is really nurtured and cared for. And when you can tell that the people creating it just left no stone unturned. And
where the passion's there.
Totally. And something I took from my 100 hours of gameplay on that game was that I never hit a wall. You know, I think sometimes in a game or an art, you hit like this invisible wall and it's like, that's where it was cared for. Like that's to the point in which they stopped thinking about it. And with this project, I really wanted to make it, I guess, my largest offering and like most sincere gift that I could give. And I wanted it to feel like a pick your own adventure and feel like you could sink your teeth as far and as wide into this world and something that you could step into. You know, again, I grew up loving Star Wars, and it just felt like that universe was just enormous, and that like there was all these planets that they thought about and all of like these parsecs and time traveling. Like it was all just so vast. And I think within my own art, I wanted to create this same kind of care to allow people to, and look, obviously, right, Star Wars, Zelda, they're not necessarily tackling maybe the same themes content that I am, but I'm an artist as well, you know, and like I just love art, and I really found myself falling kind of just back in love with art in this process, because I know for me as a kid or even as an adult now, like if someone gave me a book and they were like, oh, check this out, like each chapter starts with these song lyrics and then the chapters explore the themes, history and lived experience that connect to those songs. And then at the end is a QR code that you can listen to the song. And then next to it is a piece of art that distills those themes. I'd be like so excited. And so I think that is kind of what I wanted to give to this project.
Gotcha. What's your biggest hope for the book? Who do you hope will buy it? What sort of impact do you hope it'll have?
The hope is it goes far and wide. I think the thing of using the three different mediums is that it creates a much larger umbrella in terms of demographic, because, you know, a kid who might listen to Triple J or Spotify or wherever they get their music from, them hearing like a 3-minute song and them feeling connected to that might give them a chance to come in and have a look at this book, versus, you know, the people who are in book clubs, like they might not necessarily be listening to my music, and vice versa. Like someone walking into a gallery to look at an exhibition, again, might be a completely different demographic. So the hope is that it's something that just grows and kind of becomes embedded in, I guess, in our culture and allows people to start engaging with this discourse kind of front and center.
So you're already an author, an actor, a rapper, a director, composer, and visual artist. That one I didn't know about. What's next for Vicky Rama? What do you want to do?
I want to write a TV show. I think like the collaboration working in the film world is really exciting. I think, you know, when you're on a set, there's like 100 people and they're all have this specific knowledge trying to bring together a singular vision. So that feels really fun.
You could go down the video game route.
I know.
The South Park Stick of Truth.
I've always thought about that as well. I thought that would be super fun. I think as well, I really hope, like I would like kind of just like a long, enjoyable career where I can try lots of stuff. I think.
Well, I mean, you've burnt bright to begin with.
Yeah.
So you've got plenty of time to.
Because I don't know. Do you ever feel like the creativity gets like beaten out of you and it's like, grow up now? And it's like, I don't know. Like, I'm just trying to hold on to the kid who just gave things a go. And I think, especially like when I get thrown into the deep end, it's so much more exciting because there's like fear of drowning. So like you got to use the things and figure it out. And I'd like to keep giving different things a go and hopefully play some music, write some books, write a show. We'll see what happens. Hang around for as long as I can.
We'll see what happens. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been so good chatting to you.
Thank you for having me.
Ziggy Ramu's Human, the album and the book are out on April 30, and you can also catch him at Melbourne Writers Festival on May 10 and 11. Book your tickets at mwf.com.au. Listener.